The Ogden Music Festival is taking place May 31st through June 2nd at Fort Buenaventura in Ogden, Utah. The lineup includes Molly Tuttle and Golden Highway, Sarah Jarosz, Hayes Carl, Salice, Say She She, Las Cafeteras, Pixie and the Partygrass Boys, and so much more. Other activities include on-site camping, workshops, and a jam camp with headlining artists, yoga, and a kids zone. Kids 16 and under are free. Go to ofoam.org to book your tickets. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. The state's first ever sanctioned homeless camp was supposed to close this week, but that is not happening anymore. So what's the new plan for the downtown site and its 50 residents? And was this a good use of resources? It's Monday, April 29th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Carol Hollowell, Executive Director of Switch Point, your organization has been operating Salt Lake City's first ever sanctioned camp, a 50-bed micro shelter at 3rd South and 6th West that was set to close this week, end of April. That's not happening anymore. What's the scoop?
Oh, the scoop is that the city is going to allow us to keep it there through the end of July. So thank you, dear City Council and Mayor. So that's good news for our clients. And then hopefully we'll have another place to go after that. So we're working on two different locations with the state and the city to figure out where we go next. But the intent is not to close it down at all. It's just up in the air.
Up and move the whole operation.
Yep. All 50 pods, just pick them up and move.
Well, it's curious to hear you say that you guys aren't sure where you're moving, because I thought the state had already found a site for the new plan, which is a 100 beds, a permanent camp at 7th West and 5th South is what I thought. Is that not the plan anymore?
It could be the plan. It's still in the air. Yeah. Government roles, it's always changing. So we're just hanging on for this ride and seeing where we could go next. That would be where we would go if we can't figure out a space that might be a little bit better, you know, so.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So there's maybe hope that there'd be another option, like closer to other services? Like, you mean closer to downtown?
Or what that allows us like? To do more services.
So if things are undecided now, you've got till the end of July. What are the odds the camp will be open by the end of July so there isn't this gap between camps?
Well, the chances are very high that we'll be able to move somewhere and we would only have like a couple day downtime. And the plan is truly to say to the three HRCs who also received an extension on their flex throughout the summer is to be able to say, hey, we're shutting down for 4 days while we move the pods and reset everything back up. So if you want shelter, let's connect you to those HRCs, go there and then come back.
So wait, what you mean is homeless resource centers. So they've been given like the go ahead to expand for that day period when the folks who are currently at the temporary camp might need somewhere to stay.
Right. And really they've been given an expansion, you know, the extension of the flex, like we would do during winter overflow, they've been given that expansion for 6 more months.
So Switch Point was the service provider for the temporary camp, which basically means you all like ran operations, right? Are you planning to do that again for the permanent camp?
When they decide it's permanent, then they'll issue an RFP to anyone who wants to apply, and we would apply, of course. So, yeah.
That's a request for proposals.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things we hear often when we talk to service providers around homelessness and housing is that it's the staffing is one of the biggest obstacles. Do you all have the staffing to double the size of this camp?
I'll answer that in two ways. Number one, okay. I think that if you have a good system with a good culture, we have not experienced the staffing issues that we would have otherwise. I do believe that staffing's always tough, but we try and come in and say, hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish out of this, and really attract the people that are in the line of work, but also want some accountability on the client's side of it. And, you know, if they're both sides feel safe, meaning staff and clients, you tend to not have as much turnover as if one side feels unsafe.
When this temporary micro shelter community was announced, it was kind of exciting in the city because it's the first time we've ever done anything like this. And something we heard from the mayor's office was like, we wouldn't be able to do this without the support of the state. Of course, with any pilot project, there are lessons. Your organization, the camp's residents, like what would you improve or what would you like to see in version 2.0?
Yeah, the version 2.0, there's a couple of big lessons. Number one was we needed more restrooms, right? So the porta potties was a tough one. And so in the very beginning, it was just porta potties. Well, there's no lights in them. They're not heated. Really tough during the wintertime. So we pulled in about 6 weeks into it. We pulled in a heated bathroom. And we need more of those, number one, or something that's permanent with running water. That would be lovely. We have one hose that we all share that is the water source for the whole camp. So those were lessons learned of. We were just trying to do it quickly, efficiently, and that's where we're at. The other piece of that is really having a better base because we were trying to do it quickly and it was a pilot. The road base is really tough for walkers or wheelchairs. And so, you know, it's bumpy and it's not very stabilized. So again, looking at a permanent site, things that we could improve because we would have the time to do it correctly in the first place. And so, you know, those are little things in my mind, right? Little things of, okay, we'll make sure we're more handicap accessible. But overall, when you look at things that we've done right, having access to case management has allowed so many of them to get the services that they need that they might not have felt like they could access before. Housing being one of them, really being able to identify what types of housing that they might need, medical help. So those are some really great things on the other side of, hey, we'll make sure in 2.0 that we still have the right number of case managers so that everyone feels like they're getting, you know, access to the things that they need.
The temporary pods had heating, which was awesome because this was a temporary winter shelter. Yeah. Is the goal to have a year-round sanctioned camp? And if so, what about AC?
So the little units themselves are both, right? So it's both a HVAC, you know, so it's air conditioning and heating. So yeah, that comes with, right? And yeah, we want this to be year round so that the people who have the opportunity to start with the camping and then could move along a continuum of care to get into different types of housing or into a shelter. That's the goal, is to say, hey, we're making space for people who need to start at maybe more isolated. It's their own space. They feel safe. They can lock their stuff up. It's been great that way. And we've heard 100% of our clients have said, I feel safe and I love it that I can lock my own door. That's been the number one thing that clients have said, right? And for us, that means, hey, that's important. And we're missing that boat if we're having a lot of non-congregate shelters where everybody's in one big room and they don't feel like they can go to sleep with both eyes shut, right? They're always wondering, is my ID going to get stolen? Is my phone going to get stolen? And so this is at least what we're hearing is, we feel like we are safe in my stuff. I don't have to keep replacing my ID every time I turn around.
It's interesting that safety is such a common theme when we talk about homelessness, both inside the issue and outside the issue. Everybody wants to feel safe.
Yeah, you know, until you can put yourself in their shoes, you don't understand, you know, quite what kind of trauma someone goes through when they don't get enough sleep. We have seen this interesting kind of circadian cycle where it takes about 4 months for someone who has not had good sleep and who is always having to be on high alert, you know, at night especially, to change the sleeping habits to actually be able to sleep at night soundly and then be awake during the day. And it takes that much time. And you know, I think a lot of misconception is that, hey, here's your new bed and here's your door, close it and you'll be asleep tonight. That's not what happens. And so they're pacing and they're, you know, wandering around and they're just trying to figure out, how can I get myself to sleep? It takes them a little bit to settle down. So now we've been open 5 months, almost 6 months, and now they're finally starting to say, I actually can keep a job because I'm sleeping so good.
Mm. So is the goal then to make this permanent camp operating year round?
Yeah, that's the goal. I think it's the goal of the state and of the city to say this gives an opportunity for a sanctioned camp where people feel like they've got some security. They've got advocates in their corner. They have access to food. And, you know, going forward, we would definitely for 2.0 have showers available. That's been a tough one, right? There's no place to do laundry and showers unless they walk around the corner to the Wigan Center. But, you know, sometimes there's a big line or there's a broken shower. And so it's hard to go weeks on end without being able to clean yourself.
Salt Lake, I invite you to seriously upgrade your post-work hikes, picnics, or backpacking trips with Basecamp Treats freeze-dried snacks and desserts. Here is why I love freeze-dried snacks for an outdoor adventure. Top of the list, they are weightless and durable. Also up there, no mess. You can enjoy Basecamp Treats fire-roasted s'mores without gooey hands. And besides the function of it all, there is something about the way we can change something's texture but retain its flavor that totally delights me. Basecamp Snacks' innovative approach to freeze-drying snacks is award-winning. They were named Utah's most creative dessert. And yeah, from raspberry cream puffs to strawberry bark and freeze-dried pickles, they have character. Treat yourself on your next outdoor adventure. Visit basecamptreats.com to see all their products. You will be shopping local, and you'll get 20% off your online purchase with promo code CITYCAST20. That's basecamptreats.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Well, I know there were quite a few rules to follow in order to reside at this temporary camp. Can you paint a picture for me? Like, what was the ambiance for residents living there?
It's very quiet. The clients that have stayed there long term have appreciated the fact that they know what to expect and that there's structure. It's not chaotic. And so that has helped a lot, you know, with just people feeling like they can relax enough to actually meet with the case manager and not feel like it's always in turmoil. There are some rules, but with the rules, it creates the structure so that people can go to sleep or that they feel like they're not having to listen to a screaming neighbor or that they, you know, it just creates a sense of safety. It's hard to, you know, sometimes tell people, hey, no, you can't have overnight guests. And they're like, well, yeah, but this is my house. Well, I realize that they're, number one, very small. They're not very big. It's like 76 square feet. So by keeping it contained to where we know who's coming and going, that has eliminated a lot of either violence or drug problems because you know your clientele, right? We're knowing who we're working with. They know us, they trust us, and we know them. So it's just part of the drill, really, to say, how do we create a safe environment that's good for all?
What happens if you break the rules?
Well, it depends on what kind of rule. Right. So, I mean, if they are a danger to themselves or others, like threatening or, you know, beating someone up, then they've lost their chance to stay there. If it is, hey, I broke curfew, we sit down and we talk about the reasons why. You know, we're trying to be a good neighbor. You know, a lot of this is about how do we be good neighbors to the tenants that live around where the camp is right now in apartments. And so we're trying to say we're going to be respectful, just like another apartment is, quiet hours are. you know, XYZ, a hotel has quiet hours. You know, you can't be at 3 a.m. having a big party in a hotel without somebody coming and knocking on your door and saying, hey, knock it off, else you're going to get the boot. So it depends on the severity of the rule, but we're trying to say, how do we help you? Right? It's not like it's a, you know, one and done, you're out. If someone wants to come in and be a drug distributor, they're going to lose their privilege of living there. If somebody comes in and they're high, they're not going to lose their privilege. We understand that. But they cannot prey on the rest of the neighbors that are living in there.
The Salt Lake City Council recently put $1.8 million towards funding some of the police overtime necessary at the sanction camp. What does the police presence look like on site? Because we're talking about safety a lot.
Sure. They haven't had to be on site that much. But what they have done is they have stepped up the patrols significantly in that area of town. I see them a lot parked, you know, like one block away. They can do their paperwork there, you know, for other stuff. But what it's done is it's cleaned up the whole area down there by the Rio Grande. And we have not had a lot of campers. In fact, we haven't had any campers who are camping outside of the fence or trying to get in, or any garbage piling up around the sanction camp. And I think a lot of that has been because there's been law enforcement who are patrolling that area. And again, we were trying to be a good neighbor too, and I think we have been, to the city, to our neighbors who are there that have businesses, to the housing that is surrounding that area, to the tracks, you know, UTA is right there. So that's, you know, really why we had to enforce some of these rules, is to say, we're going to have curfews and we're going to have a clean camp, and we're going to mitigate as much as we can on the impact to the neighborhood.
What are police officers doing besides patrolling? Like, are they involved in administration of the camp in any way, or like relationship building?
I think they do a relationship building outside of the camp, for sure. We've seen them talking to quite a few clients and helping them with trying to get their stuff maybe all the way to the camp. But really, they're not on the premise as much as they are in the surrounding neighborhood.
I wonder if for some people that has the effect of making them feel maybe more comfortable at the camp.
I think so. But I mean, we're trying to, we always have good relationships at any of our facilities through Switchpoint with law enforcement. But certainly we have our own security, our own staff that is patrolling, meaning, you know, they're just making sure people aren't throwing things over the fence or trying to push drugs through, you know, the fence holes, or, you know, sneaking in at night. We're trying to keep everyone safe. And that's the whole point of it, is let's keep the people who have chosen to come and live there, let's keep them safe, and let's meet the needs that we can.
I mean, it's so hard to measure success around homelessness, because success is people get housed and they can stay in that housing for a long time. Yeah. But in terms of the success of this temporary micro shelter, how are you measuring that? What are some of the markers?
Well, I think there's some of those markers. I think, you know, for us, it was definitely how many could we get working again. So as we measure employment, or we measure access to other services or access into housing, so they leave us and go into housing, are they accessing medical care when they really needed it? So we had about 175 that we've seen throughout the entire time. So when you look at, okay, we've got 50 pods, we've rolled through 175, about 10% of those went into some kind of a hospice or the in-between. About 15% went into permanent supportive housing, which to me, that's a great number, because that hopefully will mean that they'll maintain housing long term. And then the rest of that turnover that we've seen, they've either been able to go find a roommate. That's been really impressive to watch, as they've built up relationships with each other. And they say, well, we won't, you know, we're not eligible for permanent supportive housing, but what if we teamed up and we could actually share an apartment or share, you know, some bedrooms at a house. And so now we've seen this kind of connection happening, where people are able to bunk up, if you will, right, into shared housing. So we're hoping that by the end of April, we'll run that first 6 months of stats, and be able to, we'll have to report that to our stakeholders, so the city and the state and the county, and say, here's what happened. Here's what we saw. You know, what's really impressive to me is almost 80% have income. And I think that that's shocking to some people, where they're like, no, they're all, no one works, and they all just want a free ride. That is not what we've seen. And we've not seen that in any of our overflows, in any of our housing. These are people who either have disability money, they've got Social Security, or they've got some kind of employment. They just can't afford anywhere to go. And so it's how do you expect people to live on $1,000 a month when housing is so costly?
Yeah. The last time we talked to you on the show, we were talking about the permanent supportive housing model. And you were saying that's the way. Like, that feels like the future over this shelter, night after night shelter model. Yeah. Frankly, like, would you rather the state fund this temporary shelter community or just more housing? Like, is this a worthwhile use of resources? Do we need more housing?
Hands down, I would prefer more housing. I mean, it's, to me, it's not even a question of, instead of building more shelters, I would love it if we could look at this and say, how do we build more deeply affordable housing? The two hotels that we converted off of North Temple into housing are great success stories. And our seniors and veterans who are living there love their homes. And they feel valued and they have dignity because they pay their own rent. I truly believe that that's the best way. Now, we can't necessarily start that. We have to identify those that are ready and able to go into housing. So I think there has to be some kind of, you know, spectrum of starting with a camp and then moving them along, you know, that continuum of care and getting to housing. And this at least allowed us to do that. But ultimately, if we're truly going to end homelessness, we have to build deeply affordable housing. There's no other way.
Carol Hollowell, Executive Director of SwitchPoint, thank you so much for your time.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our founding members. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city.